Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into the 60th episode of 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush with Adam Luckett, and it's E60. We're ESPN now. Congrats, Luckett. We did it.
Feels good, doesn't it?
It's a relative term. We're we're later in the week than normal because I was not feeling good. I actually have a cough drop in my mouth now, so if you hear something funky, we're just, you know, we're playing hurt. Okay, we, you know, getting all the jitters out of our system.
I know the cough drop feeling. We remember on our combine trip, I was eating those like candy.
Oh yeah, yeah, you really were. I'm doing the same thing now because
yeah.
If I really don't, then I'm not. I can't really swallow. So it's been a week, but you know, we're trudging along. Luckily, we had some football to watch over the weekend, Adam Luckett. And you know what? I don't think we need the Big Ten because we got the Fun Belt, baby. How much fun was that, Luckett?
That was they owned it. They owned the whole day, pretty much. At least that noon hour, we had Louisiana, Iowa State, which a lot of people I think thought could be an opportunity, but Arkansas State beating Kansas State, I think, surprised a lot of people. And then they had that thriller, UTSA Texas State, excuse me, which was just an incredible football game, going back and forth. If you like do the college football experience through Twitter, where you're watching the games, but you're also keeping eye on Twitter, see if you miss anything or whatnot. Maybe you need to flip over this. That's what that was made for. Because how many times you gonna watch, you know, even in a thin slate like this, like Texas State, UTSA on ESPNU, then you find out, well, this game's kind of crazy, and then it just builds on the crazy. And it ended up with a, you know, missed kicks, punt return touchdowns, just all kinds of nonsense.
Well, because even for a guy like me, UTSA versus Texas State never enters my radar. It just doesn't. So I experienced it through Twitter initially just to like find that the game was happening, because at that time, I think we were in that Florida State, Georgia Tech weather delay.
Notre Dame was like at halftime.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a lot of weirdness happening. So I turned that game on, and I don't have the Luckett layer where I've got three TVs rolling. So I'm just trying to be really diligent with my remote. I'm not feeling well. I'm supposed to be blogging on the site. I'm just, you know, it's just a mess. And I turned the game on, and I'm like, well, looks like it's over. They gave up a 91-yard punt return.
I know.
With a minute left. A minute
broke like
left.
Eight tackles, yeah.
I mean, all you have to do is just make one play, and no, 91-yard punt return.
Well, I had texted you shortly before that, and you're like, what's going on in this game? I said, well, Texas State just threw a pick six. UTSA is going to win this.
They're up and like, I was like, oh, well, 13. Damn it.
And then they ended up tying it. It was utter nonsense.
Well, and then to top it off, they get the 91-yard punt return touchdown, and then they miss the extra point to take the lead. So they end up having to go to overtime. Yeah. And then go to overtime. In the overtime, the two touchdown catches were just stupid. They were so great. They're just throwing fades in the end zone.
And then the second one, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw it on Twitter. The holder on the Texas State field goal had the laces in. So that's why I missed the field goal. And then UTSA kicks it on like second down. I'm like, what are you doing? You're just asking to miss it, kicking it on second down. But yeah, the whole game was just crazy. That's what we've been waiting on. That's a college football Saturday. You can't have a college football Saturday without having a random game you had no intention on watching. You're spending way too much screen time on it for just because it's just
absurd.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, just absolutely insane. And the name of the game, though, in that game and in all of them was special teams. Special teams were just – it was a four-alarm fire. I mean, I thought we had Craig Nivar back there calling the shots again because it was a freaking mess in basically every game.
In the NFL, too.
I'm trying to even think of a college football game. I guess Duke-Notre Dame didn't really have one. But aside from that, I don't know if I can name one other game that didn't have some sort of stupid special teams thing happen in it. The Louisiana game that we told you all to keep an eye on, I really like that underdog. That was two returns basically changed that game.
That's why they won, pretty much.
Man, Matt Campbell. It's got to be a tough weekend for the Bear when his boy Matt Campbell goes down. Like he
not only the Bear, there was a lot of Iowa State hype from a lot of different people. You had Tim Brando. Tim Brando every year, he's like a play-by-play guy. He does a bunch of other stuff. He used to be on CBS. Mm-hmm. He goes on Feinbaum and gives like his top 10, but it's how he expects the season to finish. And he's always got like a random team in there, like making the playoff or whatnot. Yeah. One year he had Louisville playing the national championship, like when they had Charlie Strong. And then, well, his this year was Iowa State was going to make the playoff.
Well, that hot take didn't go very well. Yeah,
so all the Matt Campbell hot takes didn't even last through the noon window on the real day of college football.
And it wasn't even like when everybody was playing either. They were like the only ranked – they weren't the only ranked team, but they were the only ranked game early on before Notre Dame got rolling and Clemson ended up.
Well, that's what they get for not painting the field. I felt like I was going to watch a freshman game on Saturday at high school.
Yeah.
The field's kind of a mess. It's, you know, it's an early morning kickoff.
There's holes.
The stadium
inside.
Has no energy. Yeah. Piece of junk stadium.
I did like that they had the cheerleaders and the band like spread throughout the entire stadium. Yeah. So it at least added a little bit of juice to hear the band. But man, Louisiana, them Raging Cajuns, they're pretty good. And Brock Purdy, he was pretty bad. I think he was like 13 of 27 or something, and people were talking to him like he was going to be the best quarterback in the Big 12 over Sam Ellinger, and it's like, whoa. What are you doing now, fellas?
Billy Napier is obviously a guy that, as the season goes on, we're going to talk about. Like, I think he's going to be a primetime candidate if South Carolina opens. So I don't think he's the real story here. We knew, like, what he had cooking. The story was just Campbell's star, I think, being dimmed a little bit.
Yeah,
I think you saw a lot of people kind of got ahead of themselves on him, where he pulled some upsets early and kind of got anointed as, you know, the next guy. But when you take a deeper dive into what he's doing, this is kind of what he does. He's 0-9, I think, against Power 5 opponents in September.
True.
They get out to really slow starts. He has yet to beat his rival because they play Iowa every year, like second game of the year. Second or third game of the year. So he's yet to beat Iowa. He's got an FCS loss on his schedule, now a G5 loss. And when you look at Iowa State, this is what jumped out to me, is that eventually, yes, like you need to develop talent no matter where you are. Like you have to get players in there and develop them, but eventually you got to have some recruiting to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the 40s and 50s every year. So if you're not hitting it out of the park – developing wise, and you don't have any star talent to fall back on, I think that's what you're kind of seeing with them. Because like you mentioned, the receivers, they just don't have any talent there. That watching them, that's all it is. Like they cannot get open against a good team, but they cannot get any separation. Purdy was never throwing to any guy. I mean, everybody was blanketed he was trying to throw to. And yeah. PFF had a stat today that said all his balls were like none were uncatchable. Like he gave his guys chances. It's just they couldn't get any separation. And then
that's crazy.
Their tight end is an All-American who was out for that game. So really, when you look at Matt Campbell, it's just what I've kind of thought in my head. He's got an all-time quarterback at Iowa State, maybe the best quarterback they've ever had. He's kind of cashed in early, but really, they're kind of like everybody else. You know, he's got to win a lot of close games. If he doesn't, they're going to be just an average record. If they win a bunch of close games, he can have a 10. But the expectation have gotten out of whack for him, because if you look deeper and just look at, you know, just the base talent, what he's bringing in, he just doesn't do it for you. Like you should be able to recruit better than what he's done. And I think And we're seeing from him, sometimes it's better to leave right away as soon as your stock's hot. If not, you can get kind of stuck at a place. And that could happen to him at Iowa State.
It certainly could. And you know what? Is Ames that bad? I don't know. I've never been there. I've never been to Iowa. Have you ever been to Iowa before?
No, that's – I have a list of bucket trips I would love Kentucky to take. Up there is Iowa City, mm-hmm. Kinnick Stadium.
Yeah.
Through the Virginia, way. Virginia Tech, Blacksburg. I feel like
Stoops is eventually going to want to get that game with Iowa. Just – I mean, we get the damn bowl projection every year, and I'm just mm-hmm. thinking of all the versus his alma mater storylines. Once he feels good about it, he'll quit scheduling these MAC schools. I think the Iowa home and home will be the natural fit. But go on. Virginia Tech, that's another good one.
Off the top of my head, like West Virginia, I think would be pretty cool. I think a lot of people would be interested in that. I know there's like the you don't want to go to West Virginia because you might get beat up or something because their fans are –
yeah.
Kind of rowdy, but like Kentucky goes to LSU, like, I don't know.
Yeah, right. My dad went to the Pat White game whenever Louisville was up real big, yeah. And then they lost in three overtimes. And, you know, he had not like horror stories that happened to him, but like, he's like, yeah, you know, you got West Virginia fans and they're cussing you out during the national anthem, you know, and they used to sneak.
Part of that, I think, is just us being around Louisville fans so much. They talk about it like it's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like it's going, like it's walking through Lucifer's lair or something.
Yeah, like, come on. This ain't Rutgers. This ain't Piscataway. You aren't going. Right. Hell, even Hattiesburg, I bet, was, you know, mm-hmm. like the jungle for them. They're used to going to the Liberty Bowl where Memphis has, mm-hmm. you know, 700 fans.
Right. Those are just three kind of regional, I think be cool to go to. And from a Kentucky standpoint, mm-hmm. I think you could have pretty good expectations maybe going in there and win. But, like, I think Iowa City just seems cool. Madison, obviously, Wisconsin.
Yeah,
to go jump to Camp around. Randall. Yeah, and there's, you know, obviously there's a bunch in the Big Ten. Like, you go Happy Valley, Michigan, obviously Ohio State.
Big Ten, they're playing football. Congrats, Donald Trump, you did it. President saved football. Adam Luckett, what would you like to say to our president for bringing his football back?
Well, first off, I got to mention this. Did you see Heather Dinich's latest tweet?
Oh, the Pac-12 is coming back too. Nobody cares, Pac-12. Like, dude, seriously, nobody cares. Like, oh, we won't get to see Keaton Slovis lose to Utah in the Pac-12 championship and, like, ruin their chances of – no, actually, they wouldn't lose to Utah because Utah loses in the Pac-12 championship. So they would lose to like Arizona State or something weird. Or like, oh, we can't see that. Like, oh, sorry.
Hey, I'm all for it. I just think there need to be some ground rules. Like, you cannot play a game before 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Ooh, you either play it, it's either after dark or it's a.m. So it's like 8 a.m. You get the 8 a.m. kicks. Yeah.
Big noon kickoff. Yeah, there you go. That's what I'd say. Just, you know, litter me with options, 4 or 5 games to watch at midnight.
I mean, please. How much of this really was just they saw other people playing and they're like, oh, damn it.
Well, Nick, they just underestimated the player movement on this. And coaches not falling in line and athletic directors making noise. Yeah.
I think they just assumed that coaches were going to be like, oh, we got a year off. We're going to be fine. Like, no, that's not how football coaches work. They had too much time off as it was.
They misread the room, obviously. And part of the decision, like we remember back then, like 40 and Thamel were tweeting out, delay is imminent. College football season will be canceled. Like down that August Saturday, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was a dark afternoon for a lot of people. But then SEC came out and was just like, no, we just announced. Because that was literally like right after the schedule, right after we got the SEC schedule.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it was that week.
So SEC's like, no, because
we got the Friday – we had the Friday news dump on the opponents, and then the following day it was like, college football is never being played again. Yeah.
They just didn't read the room right. They thought they would be a trendsetter, a leader. And they just got blowback. I think a lot of it, like, I think Nebraska had a big part in this. From the get-go, they were like.
Wow, Nebraska. Good job, Nebraska.
but they were the first one to really, like, back down. It wasn't just the coach. It was the athletic director. It was the president. It was the, you know, their media there. I mean, they really kind of stood firm. And I think that gave other people confidence to speak out in from a Big Ten standpoint. But overall, Warren just – he didn't read the room. He just kind of – he made a big decision and thought everybody would get behind him, and that's just not how it worked. Now, there's obviously a lot more to play in the Big Ten because you – like Michigan and Maryland, I think from a COVID number standpoint, they're still in like pretty bad shape as a state. So there's more of that at play. And there's obviously – there were schools that came out and said that they didn't want to play pretty much, was like Minnesota, Rutgers, Michigan State. So there was more – it's not – whereas the SEC, I think everybody was pretty much all in on playing. So there was a little bit more of that at play. And obviously we can get into what the POTUS did, whether that helped or not. Dan Wilkins saying it didn't. So if he's saying it didn't –
oh, then it definitely did.
Might have to run with did. It.
My favorite thing was that they had like the parents like FOIAing and suing over how it went down. And then you had them show up outside of Big Ten headquarters. And like, honestly,
I don't think that really had much. I think it's more just the players and the coaches and the men, like, no, the school is not falling in line with what the commissioner says. And the commissioner makes a ruling.
Well,
it's supposed to be like, all right, he's like the face of our whole corporation here. We don't want to embarrass him, so we'll fall in line with whatever he says. But this time it was like, no, we don't, no, we're not cool with this or whatnot. Well,
it was like whenever the SEC voted to go to a conference-only schedule, and you had the one dude from South Carolina just like, I think we should play Clemson still, where –
yeah.
Even that was frowned upon. Like, that's how much – like, that was frowned upon, and that was really just a symbolic gesture. Whereas, like, there were three teams that were fighting against us from the get-go and many more that kind of quickly hopped on board. So, either way, like, I don't want to spend too much time on it because, frankly, I checked out of the story, like, a month ago.
Long story short, they rushed to a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just waiting their hand, they should have known the United States of America is a football crazy country. And as soon as football start being played, the people in those pockets that you stripped it of are obviously going to have some pushback for that.
And so I think we're
the testing most, obviously helps.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that stuff's fine and well, but really what I'm, That felt like it was more of like the Big Ten, they never really planned on playing. They just made up kind of excuses along the way. They thought they were going to be the trendsetter, that they'd be better safe than sorry. Now they at least do have some medical things to say, oh, look, it changed for us. But I'm not buying it. What I'm most looking forward to out of all of this, like it, is for a undefeated 9-win Big Ten team to argue they deserve to be in the playoff over a 9-1, either Florida or Georgia, who's like a one-loss SEC team who didn't play in the SEC championship. That's what I'm really ready for, is the disparities in the games they're playing. And just like, hell, in the ACC, they're going to end up playing 11 games. So I'm excited for those playoff arguments.
What happens if Ohio State has to miss three games for other teams' COVID outbreaks or something, and they're 6-0.
It's going to be such a mess.
Yeah.
It's going to be such a mess. Because, like, I mean, we've already seen in the ACC, they rearranged the schedule this weekend. Virginia Tech were supposed to play. Mm-hmm. They got moved back, and, hell, Virginia wasn't even going to be able to open their season till like, October. So they moved up their game with Duke to, I believe, next weekend so that they would – luckily, the ACC at least was smart enough to act quickly. But that's the kind of shuffling you're going to have to do. And they've given themselves no wiggle room whatsoever at all. 8 games in 8 weeks in the Big Ten.
Right. That's, I mean, what happens if cancellation? I mean, they're pretty much banking on this instant testing. So I think with that, it takes out the contact tracing, which we saw at Missouri today. Drinkwitz said 10 days before they play Alabama that 12 players are out due to COVID, whether testing positive for it or through contact tracing.
The thing that I don't get is how come you have to sit out longer for contact tracing than you do for testing positive? I guess maybe because it could take longer to get symptoms, but that seems weird to me. That seems off.
I saw somewhere today where they had a player that's been in contact tracing for like 37 days or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how that works, to be honest.
Right, right. Which eventually you'd be like, all right, dude, let's just get you.
Well, yeah, we need to get that instant testing as fast as possible so they can stop doing that contact tracing.
But either way, football's happening. Kentucky, they had their third scrimmage on Saturday, and they had a little bit of contact tracing. Stoops said it got to one position group. He didn't specify which. If I kind of read between the lines, I can guess, but I'm not going to because it's nothing better than a guess. And it sounds like it's at least early enough to where it shouldn't be a significant problem. But the first team, they only did two reps because they typically only do two full contact scrimmages. So they kept it light. Graham was pissed because they had penalties on third down. So not a whole lot to take away from this scrimmage compared to much many of the other ones. Other than, like, we got a kicker now. Matt Ruffalo is going to be the kicker this year.
And what's your name for Mr. Ruffalo?
The spicy Italian meatball.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey,
I will say with Ruffalo, we've seen him boom some kicks, 50-plus.
Yeah.
Got a report he's hit a 51 or 52-yarder in practice.
Hit a 50-yarder against Arkansas last year.
I don't think distance is necessarily his issue. It's probably just more, can you hit that one from 36 from the left hash?
Well, and really the only bad miss I remember him happening was when he came in cold against Mississippi State. Yeah. And he hit one off the left upright. And, like, you know, I think that was his first kick of the year. So, yeah. I can't even blame a kid for coming.
He missed a couple extra points, too.
That's true. Yeah, I think he was 18 to 20.
Then we heard Chance Poor is going to do kickoffs.
I love this strategy now, too. Like, all right, you kicker, you lose the competition, you're just kicking off. It's going to be kind of
– you keep them involved, man.
It's got to be kind of like degrading, though, you know? I mean, at least you're like, still in scholarship.
It's like losing a quarterback competition and you're the holder now on PATs.
It's tough. It's real, real tough. The other kind of good news we got was that Austin Dotson is seeming like you got a couple of guards to work with now because Austin Dotson – has emerged, and he talked to the media yesterday, and he is a good old Belfry boy. And I think whenever fans hear from him, he really, really fits the culture of the Big Blue Wall.
Yeah, it sounds like they got a lot of guys. They keep throwing up names. We've heard Quentin Wilson a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Kenneth Horsey right there. Austin Dotson. And then Jeremy Flax. I don't know if you've kind of noticed this. Him lately, they've been throwing him with his name out there.
And I still don't know what they're – I guess they're playing him at tackle. But they haven't really been specific.
When they talk about him, though, it makes it sound like it's a guard.
Yeah.
Because it's usually when they're bringing up guards is when they bring his name comes up.
That's true.
So, from that standpoint, it sounds like they got a bunch of guys. So, I don't think we'll really know until we see them out there.
Man, I'm writing an offensive line position preview tomorrow. I should get to the bottom of this and figure out where Jeremy Flax is playing. but it does feel like that they've got a lot of guys that they're at least comfortable with now. And worst comes to worst, you bump Kennard down to play guard. But having the Dotson development, I think, was significant.
Because that for me, I just kind of – I didn't even consider him, honestly, coming in the year as a guy who could crack the rotation. Because he had been on campus for, what is it, going on 4 years. We hadn't really seen him at all or really heard about him.
No, nothing.
So that's been kind of a little bit of a revelation. But that's part of the recipe over there is they get some of these guys that are slow cookers. They just take a little bit. And by the time they're a redshirt junior, they just throw them in there. Then you're like, oh, that guy, I remember him.
Yeah, and the way he put it too, he was like, "We never really had pass blocked before. You know, he's a wing T lineman from Belfry running with a Dudley Hilton, you know, just
their pass sets were for halfback toss pass or something.
yeah. Like he's like, if we were running a pass, like it was like Ed DeSales, we called it the waggle because we were wing T base. We ended up spreading things out a little bit more, but hell, we pulled a guard and rolled out the quarterback whenever we passed. Mm-hmm. So like that's what he was used to. So it took him a while. And I think some of it was just the mentality, like, yeah, I had to sit back and let them come at me. Like, I just didn't, you know, it took him a while to pick up. But he's done that, so that was good news to hear. And we've gotten some Joey Gatewood updates. We haven't gotten the big one. Like, do you think we're going to get the big one this week?
I don't know. I would hope so, but I thought it would come last week. Before then, I thought it would come that week.
Well, and even Stoops made it sound like that they're basically just dotting the T's and crosses in the I's of a press release.
Monday. But they also, NCAA just furloughed their entire compliance staff.
Well, he said it's with the SEC now, because that's the thing about these interconference ones is they got to go through the league office, then the NCAA, then back
to. Do I need to drive down to Birmingham and have a talk with Greg?
Yeah, you and Greg, hash it out. Maybe bring your buddy Bob. Bob carries a lot of weight around Birmingham. If you
can, Bob can mediate.
Yeah, bring Bob the mediator in there. But it sounds like I'm honestly surprised the way that Stoops has put it. It's Wednesday night. We still haven't heard anything. But the Gatewood
feels like a Friday news dump.
Yeah, you had Travis Graff reporting that there's like a quid pro quo that they're not going to play him against Auburn, which, like, if I'm Stoops, like, I know you don't want to burn that bridge with Malzahn in the future if you get another guy from Auburn. But I would also just say, like, I mean, who cares? Like, Gus ain't going to be there that long.
I'm not saying Travis got that from, like, I'm sure he got that from a reliable source, but I just don't buy that.
That sounds just ridiculous. Sources.
Yeah.
Like, it just does.
I don't see Mark Stoops sitting in his office. Ring, ring. Hey, Mark, this is Greg Sankey. I've got Gus Malzahn on the line with me. Oh, hey, what's up, Gus? Still running that rinky-dink offense? Yeah, we'll let you have Joey Gatewood, but he can't. Like, what? No. Oh, like, what? That just doesn't make sense. That doesn't add up in my head. But
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, it could be true. I mean, if it's true, like,
I mean, crazier things have happened.
What do you do? Like, yeah, that stuff can't happen. Like,
yeah. But Mitch, I get you. You're more of a basketball guy, but damn it, football's important too. All right, we can't be letting our quarterbacks be held hostage here by Gus freaking Malzahn.
Right.
But
I mean, if Gatewood was clear 2 weeks ago, let's just say that, like, I still think his involvement in this game was going to be little to none. Kentucky as a staff has proven in these types of situations with new players to bring them in slowly.
Right.
And with the first game and doing like a change of pace thing, which what you would do with Gatewood, Wildcat, and maybe having some, like, you know, tricky ball handling type stuff where, you know, you run a reverse out of it or, you know, just whatever. I just don't – like, I think his involvement in a normal world would be very, very small against Auburn anyway.
Like, oh, yeah.
I don't think, like, he's coming down there and he's going to –
They would have, like, a handful of plays tops. And maybe if the quarterback power works on a short yarded situation, they go back to it. But you're right. Like, I don't – even if he does get approved, I don't see it happening. Eddie Grant, actually, we finally heard how Joey has actually been progressing on the field. And Graham was like, man, he's just so tall. He's got such a big arm. He just – and I thought it was funny that tall is the first thing that he pointed out. But it's like, you know, he can just see some things that the other quarterbacks can't see. He can make some throws the other ones can't see. But – from the sound,
you know what that comment sounded like to me?
Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, he's big and strong, but, like, the accuracy really isn't there right now, and maybe he's, you know, he's kind of swimming in his playbook.
Oh, and that's definitely the case, because he, for lack of a better term, the playbook is as big as it's ever been, and they weren't slowing things down at all for Gatewood and Allen to catch up. So those guys are swimming, and you know what? Good for him. Like, they're fine. If they got to come in a limited capacity, then they will. But for now, we're going to juice this offense up because it's Terry Wilson's offense.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt
right
about that.
But other than that, there really hasn't been a whole lot of UK football news. Once the kind of games kicked off, things have kind of quieted down around UK.
This is always the – and now this camp is weird, but this is always the deadest time of camp.
Yeah.
About 10 days before the game. Mm-hmm. Usually that week before every – like they start – stop talking really. When they do talk, they don't give you really any much – pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. Then you get into game week. In the game week, and you're just waiting to get to Saturday, and then it starts flowing better after that, after the first game. But this is always kind of the dead time.
And unlike other times, we actually have games now. But like it, unfortunately, this week's college football slate, it stinks. It's garbage.
It's very almost thin.
As bad as the first week.
It is what you make of it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, this is thin, and it can get.
I mean, Louisville-Miami, I'm excited for that game because watching Miami, De'Aaron King is as good as advertised. I mean, that guy, I know he had a couple highlights with his legs, but he's very deliberate with his throws. He gets it out of his hands quick. And then we saw Louisville and Western. Western actually had some opportunities. That one guy you talked about on the edge, that was your pick that didn't come through.
Almost backdoored. Almost the backdoor stayed alive just for a little bit. But yeah, Louisville.
I mean,
it was never really close. They kind of owned that game.
They had the strip sack, and if you recover that, you're on the one, and you're right there. They had the, I think they gave up third downs of like 17, 12. I mean, there was a six. There was
they had a couple balls that
yard pass. You know, like
I think Cunningham's first or second touchdown. The safety, it was four vertsy through the slot receiver. Safety just took a bad angle. Like, it should have been a pick. And then the Fitzpatrick coming out of the third quarter. Oh, my God.
That was like insane. He's trying to catch it like a punt. Go get the freaking ball. You're safety. Yeah. Can't just wait back for it. This isn't baseball. You're catching a can of corn.
When handicapping that game, I underestimated, I guess, the lack of foot speed in WKU's.
You also got to think about just Western Kentucky defensive backs in general. I watched plenty of them during the Brom squad era. And, you know, no offense to those guys. Hell, my brother was one of them. Mm-hmm. Not always best, especially against Louisville's offense. Which, by the way, we got to talk about Louisville's offense because what a crock of shit that is. My goodness. They are just – it is so frustrating to watch people get excited about Louisville football because it is the least deliberate offense ever. It's just like, let's shake it up and see how many 50-yard plays we can get. They're running – it reminds me of – an old game of NFL blitz where you're just running to bomb every play, or you're going up against your little brother in NCAA football 2004, and it's Hail Marys and speed options every single play because that's all they do. They don't run, they can't sustain a drive. It's one big play, and it's one big play. It's five bad ones, and then it's another big play. Mm-hmm. And okay, yes, it is fun. It's kind of like mummy ball to an extent, but at least even mummy ball was a lot of underneath stuff. So like, I don't even know what to compare it to because they roll out Mikael Cunningham. They rolled him out 33% of his pass attempts. What does that say about your offensive line if you're rolling out your quarterback a third of the time?
You saw early WKU is getting pretty good push there on that offensive line. And that's a big question mark. Satterfield's offense is not in the complexity of it. It's just their execution of it. They run the same. I mean, it's the 6, 7, 8 plays. They run the outside zone, both areas. They'll throw in a speed option, and they'll throw in a jet sweep to keep you on your toes. And then everything is off that outside zone. So they'll run those boots, like you're talking about with Cunningham rolling out. Mm-hmm. They'll stretch it to one side, and then Cunningham will come boot, and that's when you'll see that tight end. Like Marshawn Ford last year made a killing off that play. Just play action, and he runs a little crossover route. And then it's four verts. They'll throw four verts in there every once in a while. They scored like three times off four verts against WKU.
And I feel like it's going to be.
But Cunningham is really good. They get away with it a lot, and they don't need a lot of, I guess, extra concepts in their passing game because he is so good at throwing the deep ball. Like, he is really good at throwing the deep ball.
Yeah, so I have to commend him for that. I also have to commend him for trying to get on the injured list in the first game. What the hell were they doing with him at the end of the game?
I didn't watch his press conference, but I would like to heard his comment on that.
Yeah, like it was because they were
so like, you got a rivalry with Tyson Helton or something?
I have no idea, but they were purposefully running him like design quarterback run, and it was like quarterback power stuff too. Like it was very weird.
He was and it's
yeah. So I don't know. This game this weekend against Miami, they're 2.5-point favorites. They got game day coming to town, which game day, it's weird without fans. It's weird that Louisville fan, like it's not even being really talked about this week, I guess because you can't have fans there. It kind of annoys me, but also they initially weren't planning to go there. They were going to go to that Virginia Tech game until it got postponed. But
they probably would have went to BYU Army over it too. But that game got postponed.
And now, like, I really do feel like this is going to be another Spider-Man meme game where you've got De'Aaron King and Mikhail Cunningham, two really good quarterbacks, and two bad offensive lines who can make really big plays. So, I mean, what does this game come down to? Like, who gets hit more at quarterback?
Maybe. Or it could just be turnovers, you know, what team turns it over in an opportune spot.
Yeah, yeah. This has potential to be the kind of silly. Yeah, I mean, because Louisville, they had their punter drop one. They had another one blocked.
Not a good look for their punter on Saturday. And then he goes over and they catch a camera saying it wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
Well, bro, like, you took you 3 seconds to punt ball. Kind of is your fault. Like, dude, that would have made me so mad. Like, I was his teammate.
He also had like the long hair going.
You got one job, bro.
Like it was a real.
Drop the ball on your damn foot.
You're backed up on the end zone, dude. Get in a hurry and get rid of the damn ball.
I don't know. I know.
You think Mangus will say he's better than Max Duffy again?
Won't take much, man.
Oh goodness, goodness gracious!
But that game just, I think. It's going to be a fun game. I really do think that. I think it's going to be back and forth. I think both defenses are probably going to have some trouble stopping the other. Now, Miami does have more. It's just, can they put it together? I think both of them looked pretty good last week, all things considered. When you consider everybody else, they both handled their business against inferior competition, against competition that has got some saltiness to it. Like, I think UAB and WKU are both solid football teams.
They'll be so nasty.
Seeing them go at it, I think it's going to be a good game.
But
Louisville's got to prove it can. It couldn't really punch up last year. Like the teams it beat were all teams kind of around them, but when they play teams with a pretty significant talent advantage, they got their doors blown off. So now Miami has a talent advantage in that game. I don't think there's pretty much any denying it. Can Louisville punch up?
Louisville showed their defense showed a little bit of tenacity.
Like yeah, they did. But around in the football. Also, WKU ranked like 118th in offensive efficiency last year.
Dude, how bad was that quarterback too?
That quarterback has a rag arm.
Jesus, man, so, that guy.
Right, the passing game was 15 yards and in. So King and them, they're gonna put. I mean, King's not the most accurate quarterback in the world, but they are vertically gonna take their shots down the field. Mm-hmm. And then to do that, they're doing it to open up or lighten the box so they can just run it downhill. I think it's gonna be a unique matchup.
I bet against Miami last week, and I picked the wrong Florida school to bet against. I should have bet against Florida State because Georgia Tech, even though they got 17 field goals blocked by Florida State, upset the cinnamon rolls in a delayed game where Florida State just that's going to be a big rebuild for Mike Norvell. I'm not ready to pull out the let's get the buyouts ready, but man, that's a lot. It's going to take a lot there. Whereas, like, Georgia Tech, don't look now, but, hey, they could actually go around and maybe Jeff Collins ends up being kind of decent this year.
They can make some noise, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that quarterback was good. And also, like, how different is this Georgia Tech team than half of the other teams in the ACCs, your Boston Colleges and Dukes? Like, I don't see them being very different. And – after that big win now, they are – let's see, what's the spread here? I
can't – 7.5. It's one of my plays this week.
Oh, 7.5. Wait, they're dogs to Central Florida? What?
Home dog.
What? Oh, man, the home dogs. They're barking, man. Come on, you got to take the Yellow Jackets.
We'll move on to this week. But just last week, First start on Florida State. Like, they have recruited at, you know, top 15, top 20 level the last couple of years. But when you have all this coaching turnover, you can't hit on a quarterback. Just, you know, you're kind of a laughing stock. You're going to have some roster attrition. With all roster attrition comes lack of development. And so, really, when I look at them, it's talent issue first. Like, Norvell's got to – like, he's just got to get new players in there, new blood. Like, I think it's going to be a rough ride for him, but I think he's in a good spot because they're kind of desperate now. Like, they can't run him off.
No.
So he's going to have some time to build it. Now he needs to start recruiting better. The recruiting class is, like, sitting at, like, high 20s or low 20s right now, which is not good enough. But they have a talent issue, and they have to learn how to win again. Like, in that game, they just – they melted, and we've seen them melt like that multiple times in the last couple of years. So they,
you know what?
I mean, it kind of needs to be stripped to the studs almost and kind of rebuilt. Like, they're fractured right now.
The way that you put it, Luckett, too, the learning how to win, that's something that I didn't – like, there were a lot of lessons I learned from being on this job, and that was the biggest one at the beginning of the rebuild, is watching Kentucky mess up in these close games. And a lot of it was because those players remembered what it was like to lose in those close games. And they almost acted as if they were fans, where whenever things would get tight, you would just think about what could go wrong. Whereas when you get the new guys in, they're just out there playing. They're just trying to win, you know, like they don't have that kind of second thought. And that's how you learn how to win. And I think that's really what you're getting at now is – these guys have seen some stuff, and that mental effect is
like, you got some skeletons that they've kind of lived through.
Yeah, the scar tissue, you can't break through it right away.
Yeah, and I think it's just going to be a long rebuild. It's tough, man, because their offensive line still got issues. But he brought in a freshman that he can't really play because at quarterback because he's hurt. And defensively, they're just a shell of their former self. How long is
that guy out? Chuba.
He broke his collarbone.
Ooh,
the middle of camp.
How do you break a collarbone as a quarterback? Is this Mississippi State? Did somebody punch him again? Like, what the hell?
Right. How did that happen in practice? Yeah. I mean, who knows? If he did, that's not a really good sign. That kind of screams fragile.
Or he's like clumsy as hell and just tripped over a bag. And
so, like, I think you're looking at probably early to mid-October before he maybe even has a shot.
Yeah, and then at that point, do you want to ruin him? Like, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's just a weird spot they're in right now. Norvell's got a steeper climb than most realize. Because me watching that game, I was just like, Georgia Tech's just better. Like, outside of Jeff Sims throwing, having two red zone interceptions and the start for Florida State, Georgia Tech owned the game. And I'm not talking about just from flukiness. It was just straight up line of scrimmage. They just beat them up.
Yeah.
They own the game. So on both sides of the line, I thought. So that's – and then we'll see how good Georgia Tech is. Maybe they're ahead of schedule. But, like, for Florida State, it's just like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in this situation with Norvell, because Jeff Sims, all intents and purposes, was committed to Florida State. And if you read between the lines, it was pretty much the mutual parting when Willie Taggart left.
Mm-hmm.
Norvell saw him. The rap on Sims was like, he's really raw. Coming out of high school, he's not ready to contribute right away. He's a long-term project. Well, he didn't really look like a long-term project in that game. So he's maybe accelerated a little bit. So Florida State, they mutually parted. He goes to Georgia Tech, and now you're looking at a guy who could be in a rebuild, any rebuild. If you can get that quarterback early, it changes the whole outlook.
Well, North Carolina. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
well, just look at Kentucky with Stoops. The part of the reason the rebuild took as long as it did is because they could not find a quarterback.
Yeah, Drew Barker hurt. Yeah,
and so you're in an uphill battle. If you miss on that first big quarterback recruit, you're right. Kentucky missed on Drew Barker.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, Jeff Sims was it for Georgia Tech, and it looks like they hit on him. North Carolina, Sam Howell was it for Mack Brown. You're right. Teddy Bridgewater with Charlie Strong.
Right.
We see what Charlie Strong has done after. Teddy Bridgewater, he's been a shell of what those 3 years were with Bridgewater. So much in these rebuilds or when a new coach takes over is quarterback. You got to land the quarterback. If you get that first, it's a lot easier for everything else to fall in line. It makes your job so much harder if you miss on that quarterback.
Which, as much as I want to bash the ACC and just call them a bunch of Boston colleges and stuff, they do got some quarterbacks. And I think you would have to get to, like, the seventh before. I mean, it takes a while before you're like, okay, maybe there's a guy in the SEC better than him. Like, it's almost the exact opposite in the SEC this year, where it's just kind of a quarterback's wasteland. The ACC, if there's one thing they took advantage of getting a little bit of a head start on the other Power 5 leagues, you look around, you see some of that quarterback play, and it's like, it's pretty good.
And that's one reason I think people were a little higher on the ACC, thought they would do better, is because they've got good quarterback play. And you look at this week with Georgia Tech, they're getting home points against UCF. You know, obviously no crowd or limited crowd takes away a lot of the buzz they would have for that game. But you're starting to see some signs with Collins. And they did that without their top recruit, which was like a top 50 running back, Jahmyr Gibbs. I think he is going to play this week. By all accounts and purposes, that guy is a straight-up dude. So you get, you know, you got the quarterback now, and then you get a running back like that, they could really be in business.
I was looking at some of the lines, and I was wondering how bad Louisiana Tech could be that they're 5.5-point dogs against the Southern Miss team that fired their coach after
that line stinks.
I just was like, what?
Now, Louisiana Tech, they lost like everything off last year's team. But so I think still, that plays a part of it. Right. That's a rivalry game too, those two.
Yeah, Ruston, Louisiana. My parents have been to a game in Ruston. That's you want to talk about nowhere.
It's officially time to start the fade Syracuse movement.
Is Syracuse going to be our team?
Yeah, we're jumping on it right now.
Pitt 21.5 points.
Yeah, I don't
care. Pittsburgh can't beat a team by 21 points. Like it? No. There's no way. I'm
telling you right now.
Fade Syracuse.
Yeah, jump on it right now. I'm telling you.
Oh,
they're
man.
Not making these lines big enough. It's going to take them 5 games to adjust.
Have you been going to Indiana for these? Or do you have a guy?
I got a guy, but I will be going to Indiana here shortly.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't know if I just placed bets with my friends. You know, well, $10 here, a little $10 there. I wish I would have.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and that way I don't get like ahead of myself and thinking I'm too smart for my own good. But it would have been fun to sprinkle, like, have some money on that Louisiana game.
Here's my thing with Syracuse. North Carolina slept walk for 3 quarters, and they covered a 22-point spread.
Yeah, North Carolina did not look great.
And Syracuse put up, like, 1.8 yards per play. North Carolina's got what should be a good defense, but it ain't that good. Pittsburgh's supposed to have a really good defense. The offense – I saw enough in the offense last week putting up 55 on Austin Peay. They're going to cover that. That game's going to be like 34-3.
Oh, man. Thoughts and prayers to Syracuse.
We'll start the fade to Syracuse movement. The writing's been on the wall with that. I just needed to see it in person before I got on it.
All right. Well, we're hopping on fade Syracuse, everybody. That's free money. Doesn't matter how big those spreads are. We are fading the absolute hell out of Syracuse. I liked a lot of dogs last week, but I really can't say I do this week at all. I don't really see any in here.
Well, there's a lot of home dogs on the card. So that's going to go one of two ways. Either they're all going to get hot and hit, or it's going to be a chalk week, which would be boring as hell.
Yeah.
Louisiana's in a tricky spot, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of points against a conference team on the road, a conference team that should be kind of
– and they run a triple option. Here. Like, that's a weird offense.
Well, that's not Georgia Southern. It's Georgia State.
I'm getting my Georgia S's mixed up.
It's all right.
It happens.
But either way, like, I think that's a weird spot for them.
Yeah, and especially after you get the big win on the road. You know, that's an easy kind of come down kind of game. I'm also Troy. They are, is it road dogs? I just had it pulled up.
They're a road favorite.
They're a road favorite.
3.5. That's another game I like. Tell me what you're thinking on that, and then I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking.
Well, I don't know Middle Tennessee's personnel, but I know they'll spread it out and try to put up a bunch of points. So are you thinking the over?
No, I'm thinking this. Okay. Middle Tennessee opened the season against Army. They got the crap beat out of them. Like, they got beat like no one should get beat. And then they got a week off. And their expectations this year were supposed to be higher in the Sun Belt. When I look at Troy, I didn't love their new coach, the new hire. I don't think they're all that good. They shouldn't be favored over anybody on the road. So I'm going to take those points with the home dog.
Right. Suck there. At Trojans.
You're like going it just, down. For me, you got to look for spots like this, especially in a week like this.
Yeah.
A lot of these are, you know, spot plays for me. Like Georgia State feels like a good spot. Middle Tennessee feels like a good spot. Georgia Tech at home feels like a good spot. Pittsburgh, because we're fading Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor-Houston should be a good game, but, like, I don't
– That's two unknowns about that team, because Houston tanked last year, and Baylor's got a new staff, and they lost so much off last year's team.
Yeah, and can you trust Notre Dame to beat anybody about 25.5 points, even if it is a rebuilding South Florida? I don't know. I feel like there's not a whole lot of opportunity this week, but next week, whenever the SEC joins in and you get more – you pretty much get full slates from all three of the power conferences. That's when I think there's going to be some wonky spreads that you can really take
advantage of. And next week's noon slate, just look ahead a little bit, is
packed,
pretty stacked. You got Kentucky, Auburn,
SEC Network,
Florida, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Kansas State, I think, Louisville, Pittsburgh, and there's another one. I mean, there's pretty good games at noon. Right. Big noon Saturday.
Big noon Saturday. Well, look it. There's one other thing I wanted to mention today. Benny Snell football. How much fun was it to see him get out in the open, run a little, spread his wings?
He looks good, man.
He does.
That was exactly what he needed.
Just dropped about 12, 15 pounds, something like that. And the way that James Conner gets banged up all the time.
That's what I was about to say. NFL's all about opportunity. You know, as a rookie, they're going to invest some in you because obviously they owe you a little bit of money. But in the first 2 years, you got to make an impact somehow. And so a lot of it's going to be like when you get your chance in a game, you got to cash in. Now Connor's banged up. You go out, I think there was only two backs that ran for over 100 yards
week one. Was it him and Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Yeah, did he get over 100?
Yeah.
Because I know McCaffrey and Jacobs both had big games, so they were both at like 95 yards.
Really?
Yeah. Just scored. They had multiple touchdowns. That's why they scored in fantasy.
That adds up. Whereas like Benny, there was a couple times where I was like, especially there was a 4th-and-1 late when they were salting the game away, and they like ran a jet sweep instead of giving it to him. It was like, man, he's so good, they're already using him as a decoy.
he just looked. You know, he just looked lighter on his feet, spry. Mm-hmm. He had some wiggle. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah.
I think that's a good sign. Hopefully he can get on a run here. And with Pittsburgh, that passing game should be pretty good as long as Ben's back there.
Yeah.
They got a nice little receiver trio.
Once Ben got into that rhythm in that 2-minute drill, like at first, he looked like the oldest, fattest, like decrepit human being ever. You're like, why is this guy playing football? But he got into a nice little rhythm.
He just got the muscles warmed up. He's like me on the front nine. I stink. But on the back nine, I start hitting it okay.
It's really, he was waiting until he got on the back nine, but he looked good.
He had to make the defense turn.
Dude, the Steelers' defense is so good. Bud Dupree, holy crap. Like, Bud is in the give me my money. Or what's the one thing? Somebody bring me my money.
Better pay me my money, yeah.
That's what it is, yeah. I mean, that's Bud right now, man. He looked great.
And one thing on that game, Giants' O-line stinks for the most part. They couldn't block anybody. Their right tackle, he was just getting blown up all night. But Saquon. He's a poor guy, but he makes a couple plays. You're just like, good night. Like that one little screen he caught and jumped over somebody.
He's like the modern day Barry Sanders.
He makes fast people look not fast.
He's just going to be stuck on that terrible team for so long.
Yeah, I know. It sucks, but he's awesome.
Yeah, he really is. Hey, your boy Joey Burrow. The Bengals, are they – was Andy Dalton really that bad? Or like what?
I think the Chargers offense kind of stinks because defense is not supposed to be that good.
That's true.
Offensively, I think the Bengals have skill talent. They just can't protect.
I'm really excited for Bengals Browns Thursday Night Football. Like this is going to be, I think it's going to be a really good football game. Because all right, so I will say to take a shot at your Bengals, Luckett. and not my Steelers. They're my Steelers now. We've made that a fact now. I've spoke that into existence. But thank God for Lamar Jackson, because he took the Bengals and the Colts off of the CBS games in Louisville. Since Lamar got here, the last 2 years, they've been showing just all of his games in the local market instead of those crappy ones. So I got the chance to watch the Browns, and I actually liked what they did with Stefanski. Like, they were using more tight ends. Baker had more time. But Odell Beckham had the drops. I don't know what the hell was his deal. And then the Ravens, they got Calais. I forgot they got Calais Campbell. That dude is a freaking hoss. And he batted down one pass and then forced an interception on the following play. Really just kind of derailed the day for him. And then Lamar is just on another level. So, like, actually, like, Njoku had a couple of great catches. Like, I think the Browns offensively, like, I liked where their head was, but they couldn't really lean on the run game at all because they were just playing from behind. Mm-hmm. Like, they got behind that eight ball just way too early. So, I think the Browns and the Bengals could be a fun game with a lot of offense on Thursday night. And I hope that I'm not jinxing myself because I really want to see a good football game.
The Browns, in part, like, you're right, they want to get 12 personnel because they just signed Hooper from the Falcons. They got Njoku. They want to get in there and run the ball, play action, make things easier for Baker, because when Baker has to just throw from the pocket like that, he just gets he gets balls batted down a lot and he can't see over the line.
Yeah.
So they have to move the pocket for him in certain ways, which is not what you want third year from a number one pick. But that's kind of where they're at, you know.
Right, right. But,
they have talent. I mean, they've got talent on that team. There's no denying. In the trenches, not so much, but.
Right, right. Jedrick Wills started.
First game ever at left tackle.
Man, he's going to go up against Calais freaking Campbell.
Yeah, he had a rough outing.
Yeah, that's tough. But that should be a good game. The NFL is the thing that I noticed, like, just from watching all day Saturday and all day Sunday, like, I love the hilarity of college football, but it's so much fun to watch people who are just the best in the world at it. Like, Aaron Donald was just throwing dudes around. Like, right. That guy, he's just on another level. Lamar Jackson just put his middle fingers up to all the people who said he couldn't throw, and he's just out there dropping darts. His only bad throw was the Clarks or whatever his name was, caught like a one-handed grab and kind of bailed him out in the back of the end zone, their tight end. So, like, watching some of these guys operate, it's just a blast. And frankly, you can't tell, like, and I'm just so happy football's back.
Yeah, it was fun. This weekend was fun. Seeing Red Zone was great.
Oh, man. And we get to do it all again this weekend. And then the next weekend. This is weird. This is like the only night without football or sport. I know,
but first, Pikeville Belfry, Friday night.
Yeah, Pikeville's got a quarterback who's a stud.
Mm-hmm.
In Belfry, you know, they're going to run that wing tee down your throat. So that should be a good game. How much fun was the Frederick Douglass North Hardin game? My God. It took them a while to kick some rust off. And I think Douglass had something like 6 turnovers. But man, you nailed it. Like, at Lavelle Wright, he played some hero ball. Like, some of those plays he made, like, I'm not going to lie though, I was getting mad because they weren't feeding him enough. I know they got a quarterback with a big arm, but man,
it sounded like they were trying to save him for that fourth quarter.
Hey, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. The gamble paid off.
So that was a crazy game that ended with a crazy field goal. Don't know how that went in, but a nice start to the KSR game of the week. But Pikeville Belfry this weekend should be a good one. And then there was one other. Oh man, I'm brain farting now. Gosh, this is killing me. What else was supposed to happen? Oh, U.S. Open this weekend. Luckett.
That's right.
Who's going to win it?
I'm rolling with Xander this week. I feel like he's due. 3 top fives and 3 U.S. Open appearances. He cut it. I think that's really important this week. This course is ridiculous.
Oh, man.
The rough is like 2 year. Like, Justin Thomas is going to be in the rough. It's going to be up to his shoulders. And then the greens have all these crazy slopes and breaks on them, so it's gonna be carnage. But that's what the U.S. Open is supposed to be.
That you put on your KSR golf post, I had in the morning post as well, because it's the most ridiculous video I've ever seen. Where they're in the rough, and it looks just like your normal rough that you would see at like a public course wherever you play golf. And there's a can of Arnold Palmer's just sitting in it, Like, it goes to the top of the Arnold Palmer game. How in the hell are you supposed to hit out of that?
Mm-hmm. They're worried this week, Nick, since fans aren't there, that they're going to lose all these balls in the rough. So they've brought in like a couple, 100 or 100 so more, like volunteers or like amateur golfers or something. And that's their job, is to find these balls. They are worried about that. Like, they're going to lose all these balls because fans aren't there.
You know what? I'm just glad that we're going to have – I feel like
– let Bryson lose a ball. Please. let me have it.
But, like, the PGA, what were they – Morikawa was, like, 18 under or something, the PGA. I'm excited that we're going to get, like, a +3 winner of the U.S. Open.
That's what the PGA is. That's kind of more scoring. This is just survival. Trench warfare, man, out there in the golf course.
Oh, we're gonna have so many different clips on like Twitter of like dudes just like hitting it from one spot in the rough to the next.
This one, you'll hit like a perfect shot if you just hit it in the, like, if you just hit it off by a couple yards, it could roll all the way to the fairway.
And I think that's why I love when the courses are real tough, because it's like, well, this is like watching me play golf, and that it's so relatable.
It can go the other way, though. If it gets too bad where it's just utterly ridiculous, then it just kind of like, this is just silly.
Oh, man. But you know what? It's going to be silly either way, because we got golf, we got playoffs, we got football, we got everything happening at once. It's a great time to be a sports fan. And, you know, thanks everybody for hanging out with us and dealing with a slight delay this week while I was feeling a little bit under the weather. But, hey, I don't think I sounded too bad. You think too stuffy or anything?
It's like riding a bike, Nick. Once you do it, you can't forget how.
You're exactly right. And we'll be back riding a bike. It'll be game week the next time you're hearing from the 11 personnel crew. Folks, don't geek. It's almost here. Football, it's back. It's happening. Just enjoy it. And go Cats, go Kroger.